2, 3, 4.
I think a good teacher is someone that comes to school not for the fact that they're getting paid, and they come to school for the student.
It's a boy thing.
What I think makes a good teacher is a teacher that's willing to connect with their students, make an effort to get to know their students.
It's a boy thing.
Like, when the teacher's approachable and you don't feel intimidated when you go up to talk to them.
It's a boy thing. Bags, it's been ages since we talked to each other, and it's all on me because I just fell over. Like, when we were meant to record, what was it, 3 weeks ago or something, I just said, I can't do it. I can't.
Good morning, by the way. Good morning, pleasantries. I wasn't actually fazed by it. I just felt like, you know, our dedicated and loyal listeners, if we even have any.
They were going, what the heck happened? Yeah. They were gone.
Well, where'd they go? They disappeared. Yeah. But no, you were slammed. You were going up to basketball nationals, which your boys won, by the way. Like, so cool.
And there was a nice addendum to that is that they talked about their win in assembly yesterday, and they thanked me in front of the whole school. They're so sweet. They were so kind.
Well,
because when we were talking about not doing the recording of this, I was in such a dark, negative place. Like, I was feeling so sorry for myself.
But you know, it did crack me up because, of course, the things that you were doing were, again, washing. And cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, you were taxiing, but you were eye-dropping. Eye drops into kids. You were doing all those things. You were their kind of mother-father for the week.
That's right. Well, and the thing that I need to be humble about is that I was complaining about doing that for 12 boys for a week. That's your life.
That's where I was going to, but you actually said the answer to it. So that's okay. So we're at the same place, but you know. But also, I chose to have them. You didn't choose to have those 12 boys. You didn't breed those 12 boys. It's a very different thing. Yeah, well, your boys at Christ's are lucky to have you teaching them. So I'm pleased that they acknowledged your efforts for them.
And you know what it's like with boys? Like, it takes a lot for them to do that because they typically don't really notice the people contributing to their lives.
They don't.
You'll have noticed that difference moving from a girls' school to a boys' school.
Oh, my goodness. I think, I mean, it's huge. I do notice it. The smallest things that they're just there in their own world. But it has been fascinating. Girls see every little thing and pick up on every little thing, and they get attached and all that, whereas boys,
The boys, they'll come back to you eventually, but it probably takes them about 10 years to notice that you are a good teacher.
Yes, you do have some at the very point that do notice, but then there's ones that, yes, the majority that it does take a while for it to sort of sink in. And that's okay. That's boys. And we don't really want our students getting terribly attached to us because that's unhealthy.
Exactly. It's good this way. I did, and to be fair, on beautiful parents, I got an email last night I don't know, this happens to you quite often, an email from a parent where they were kind of expressing their appreciation for me as a teacher and the contribution I'd made to their son. And of course, he's never said anything, but apparently I'm his favorite teacher. I wouldn't even know. No. But the parents do sometimes fill that gap. Like, they do say, you know, thanks for what you've done. And it does, I appreciate it. I don't live for it, but I definitely appreciate it when it happens.
No, I think that I've been thinking about the fact of, like, when we were doing options evening or we had last round of parent interviews, and some of the parents said, oh, the boys weren't there. My son wants you next year. Can he have you again? You know, or my son talks about what you're doing in your class often. Oh, I'm like, in a good way. Yeah, loves it. Talks about English. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Again, wouldn't know this from looking at the boys, but that's cool. It's really nice to get that affirmation of your work. We're not looking for it, but when it does happen, it's really satisfying because I think a lot of people forget that teachers are human beings.
We thought we should, it's been a conversation in education for a bit. We thought maybe we could give a few hot takes on AI.
Oh, man. Hot takes on AI, and it's actually really coming out in the media more and more at the moment. You know, that article that I shared with you, which you would have heard on Radio New Zealand because you listen to it, whereas I read RNZ articles about the university, that was University of Auckland, wasn't it, and the issues that they're facing. And, of course, I kind of appreciate hearing now that it is also tertiary sector that's finding things becoming problematic, because unlike you at college, we don't use exam.net, and we're having to navigate this minefield that is ChatGPT and AI usage in our classrooms. And obviously we have a lot of, shall I say the word, pressure on us to ensure that our students are becoming somewhat masters in their literacy skills so that they can pass co-requisites, so that they can pass writing standards at level two and at level three. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I know that there's also this big chat of AI is really great, but shoot, when you're responsible for your kids and their passing and actually their future success, can they gain their NCA, then I don't know if it's that great.
I'm just going to state it straight out that I do not think that AI has a place in an English classroom. And I know people keep wanting to, even the Ministry of Education keeps communicating the narrative that it's part of the future. Schools should work with the students on how to constructively engage with AI products and services so that they can use them well. And I know that that way of thinking has a lot of agency with non-educators, because they'll think, well, obviously we're trying to look at how we'll implement AI in our workplace in order to increase efficiency, and why shouldn't schools do the same thing? But actually, that whole narrative communicates a misapprehension of what's actually happening in classrooms and what we're trying to achieve, because what we're actually trying to achieve is young people, in the case of English, learning to read and write and speak and listen. Yeah. And you don't learn that by offloading that complex and really hard task to an external service. You learn it by constantly being challenged to do it in really carefully constructed situations where each time you do it, it's incrementally more difficult until you can become articulate and until you can organize your thoughts and until you can express yourself in words, both in writing and in speech. And there's no easy way to get to that place where an individual has that kind of agency.
Well, and I also think, like, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about the fact of if we had our All Blacks, for example, getting AI to do most of their things, then how would they become skilled in their area or in their
and doing
arena?
The thing.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what we're actually talking about here. It seems, I mean, it's really obvious, but a lot of people still keep kind of challenging this whole point of view that we take or the stance that we take. And then I feel like there's also this looking at us as if we're dinosaurs or we're archaic. I mean, I'm talking to you, a man who's so good with technology. We're not actually archaic. We're just knowing what's best for our clientele.
Sort of, there are two more thoughts that sort of sit really at the front of my mind. I keep wanting to express to people. I love talking to you as you walk up and down the stairs and see the boys in the
good
background.
Morning. It's
very sweet. Especially because I just know those stairs from my own school life.
Excuse me, boys. Excuse me, boys. Thank you.
The two things I wanted to also draw attention to is that I think that one of the reasons that people misapprehend the role of AI in education is that, and it's understandable if parents and onlookers think this, but it's not the right way to think, is that they're always thinking about the quality of the product, as in the written essay or the output. And of course, we obviously do assess outputs, but we're using those outputs to assess the students' skills. We're not actually trying to produce excellent pieces of writing. We're trying to produce excellent young people, and their ability to produce excellent pieces of writing is a proxy for that. It's not actually the reason that we're asking them to do it. And the second thing is that there's also the whole domain of teachers using AI to replace our functions. So if we start using AI to do things like give students feedback or to mark students' work, then we're exempting ourselves from the learning process. And if people have been listening to this podcast, then the one thing that they probably will be getting clear about yours and my view about education is that it all starts with a relationship. And one of the biggest relationships we have with students is the collaborative relationship around the construction of their learning. So if we exclude ourselves from that, if we don't read their essays and we don't give feedback to them on their learning, then the relationship is impoverished. And that means that we won't be as effective with them. And yes, you could say, well, if the AI gives good feedback efficiently, why go through the labor of doing it? But honestly, labor is love, and labor is necessary if education is going to happen. So avoiding the labor of education is not actually an enhancement of education. And it's just very different to a lot of commercial environments where reducing labor costs and reducing labor complexity increases productivity, but it doesn't increase productivity in education because it distances people from the core of the learning and the educational process. And so it's just, I do understand why people pose those suggestions, but I really think they come from a place of misunderstanding.
Also, wouldn't you want, as a parent or a senior leader or a board person, I don't know, whoever is sitting listening to this and thinking about the teachers that they're employing or they want for their own children, wouldn't you want someone that's invested? Wouldn't you want someone who wants to do the mahi and then wants to actually be present with planning lessons that are best and most responsive for the learners that sit in front of them? Wouldn't you want them to be reading your child or the student's work and knowing actually these are the areas in which you're falling down and this is what you need to do? Like, that's being a responsive practitioner, is being in and invested, not only for the relationship, as you're talking about, because of course with the relationship, everything comes from it, but also for every other outcome, you've got to be in it. Like, you just can't be like, oh, I'm asleep at the wheel, I'll just let a computer do my work for me. Like, I just, it does baffle me. It actually baffles me. Like, I feel like, and I know at times we text each other and you might be getting a bit wound up over things and you go, I gotta reel it back, put a lid on it, Chrissy.
My little red face.
Yeah. And I know where you're sitting, and I know that your team will be in the same position or sit in the same place as you. And I'm really fortunate that I have that with my team here at Otago Boys as well. We see where things sit and it frustrates us. But I guess the thing about it is that it's like, I don't know how we kind of start really communicating that where people will really hear us. And the other thing with it as well is my fear will be that when people finally hear us, it will be too late. I mean,
or a lot of damage will have been done. Yes. I think about that kind of 30-year experiment in New Zealand with whole language learning, which for reading, which of course has been a disaster. Yes. Or we look at the modern learning environments. Mm-hmm. It's just yet another ideological thing that architects thought was a good idea that did so much harm in education. And everyone in education saw it coming, but no one was able to stop it. I think this is a possibility. This could be the next thing that does harm to the young people because it's not fully thought through. I guess I've got to the point, though, in terms of what we can do about it, where I just think all I can do is stick to my guns in my own department with my own team and my own students and prove it, demonstrate it through the outcomes for the students we teach and voice it in ways like this where we can, but there's not much more we can do. I was thinking also, I've been talking to a couple of students just incidentally who are recent graduates of Christ's College and have sort of come through this shift that we've made towards really explicit teaching of writing and that sort of thing. And they're talking about how at university they're just so grateful because they're amongst a cohort of young people who often absolutely freeze up whenever they're asked to write anything, who just don't know how to put things down on the page independently. And they're being asked to at university and the boys are saying, oh, my fine arts degree, there is actually quite a lot of essay writing, and I'm so confident with that now. I'm so grateful that I can be.
Bravo to you. And that's the whole point of our subject. Like, if I was to talk about the point of English, and of course it's literacy skills and it's unpacking societal issues and all that, but actually I always talk about an English classroom as a place where you develop a voice, a student's voice, whether that's in the written or spoken context or being able to unpack other people's voices through reading and engaging with texts. But what you've done is you've enabled them through the explicit teaching and through the strict assessment programs that you have, is that you've enabled them to have this voice so that they don't freeze up. And I think this is also what a lot of our students are doing, is that they're going to AI because they think it's going to be easy. But when they actually get into tertiary sector, which a lot of them want to go, where they're heading, that's where they're going to, they won't have the skills to be able to actually harness their voice because they're shutting it down. And that gives me a great deal of fear, because in a way it feels kind of dystopian, because it's like you're giving your power to technology rather than actually you need to have that power. You need to have that voice.
If we end up in an education system where the teachers are using ChatGPT to generate their lesson plans, the students are using ChatGPT to produce the responses to those lesson plans, and then teachers are using ChatGPT to mark that work, then really it's ChatGPT setting producing and then assessing its own product. And we're actually not in that process. None of us are there. I also think that, you know, that voice, that unique voice, is it's such a powerful expression, such a great way of putting it, Bags, because each of us does actually, in language, have our own voice. Mm. And ChatGPT also has a voice, or a series of voices, which you can kind of tune it to produce for you. But there's a big difference between a arbitrary voice and your voice. Mm. And that thing about expressing yourself in your own words, using your own faculties, it's what makes us human. Yeah. It's a fundamental aspect of our humanity. So the dystopia reference is real.
I mean, it's so 1984, you dumb down the language. This is kind of what's happening, right?
Yeah, we're just exempting the young people from even having to operate in language. And the other thing that my students, I know, are going to be able to do is that when they go out into their professional domains or into their trades or into wherever they end up in life, and they use things like AI to enhance the productivity and proficiency of whatever it is that they're doing, they will have enough language resources and enough academic capacity to critique what the AI is giving them. So they'll be able to use the AI brilliantly. They don't need my help with that. What they need my help is to have the sophistication to be able to judge what the AI is producing for them, and hopefully to stay ahead of what is an incredibly and quickly advancing level of intellect that the AI has. Because, I mean, they are in their lives going to face that moment where AI takes on the ability to think for itself. And humanity is going to have to reflect on itself at that point. And I think the best thing we can do for young people who are going to face that is hopefully develop them to be as sophisticated as they can be, so that they can respond to that existential challenge, which I think is going to come.
Which is what basically all of this stuff also is talking about, being critical thinkers. And that's actually, like, if you pass the work over to something else, you're not allowing yourself to be a critical thinker and to sit in the ugly, like, because thinking's hard. Actually doing work is hard. I mean, I think that a lot of this stuff also is a real reflection of the society that we currently live in, where everything is becoming instant gratification. You don't want to do the hard work. Give it to something else to do it for you. Because, yeah, we've shifted so much. But we do want our people to be critical thinkers, so that when they are faced with AI actually having these human capabilities in terms of, you know, the thinking process and stuff, that they can sit and go, where do we go from this? I do think it's interesting to also note that a lot of those people that were instrumental in creating AI have actually resigned from their roles. Have you seen any of those podcasts? Because
I have.
Because they're frightened of actually what's coming, right?
And not only that, but you also see those Silicon Valley schools excluding all technology from the learning process. Like the people who invented all this are very aware of how harmful it can be. And actually, if I was applying for a job right now, and the school that I was applying to asked me how I used AI in the learning process, and if they didn't think that it was good for me to say I don't use it at all, then I probably don't want to work in that school.
Yeah.
I've got to that stage. You know, I'm very grateful to be able to work in a school that, whilst they are very aware of the fact that AI exists, are quite happy to support me in the project of keeping my focus on the young person's development, not on the enabling tools.
Yes, yeah. We're going to have a discussion here at a Nature D meeting on Monday about looking at managing assessments and around how we're dealing with AI. It's going to be really fascinating to see actually what the HODs bring to the table, because, of course, we do feel in English, it's harder. It's certainly harder because, again, we're having to ensure that the students can have mastery over these skills. So I'm looking forward to that meeting to actually see where things get to and where my colleagues in a wider sense at the school are sitting with things.
And it may be different in other subjects, which are often knowledge-driven, but we're language-driven. Mm. And these are large language models. It's literally the thing that we're trying to teach the kids to do that they're doing.
Mm. My boy at his school, for one of the project-based things that he was doing, was encouraged by the teacher to use AI. And he came home and he said to me, "I have to use AI for this." And I said, "You're not allowed to." And
he's actually not allowed to anyway, because I think your sons are all too young to be
correct.
Allowed access
correct.
To AI.
Correct. Yeah. And then he went back and then there was a moment again, "You have to use AI." And he bravely popped up his hand and said, "I'm not allowed to use AI." "Why are you not allowed to use AI?" "My mum's the head of English at Otago Boys and she won't let me." And the response to that had been, bless my son, God. It's been like, as you can imagine, the fire. But the response was, I paraphrase, but along those lines of basically, English teachers are always worried about losing their jobs. I'm not worried about losing my job. I'm just actually worried about doing my job well. And doing my job well also means that I won't allow my son to use AI, because I want him to do the things that we've been talking about in this podcast. I really want him to be a fabulous writer. And, you know,
if the world is going to be run by AI, then I want our students to be the ones in charge of that.
Yes.
Just want to make a point. In case there are people listening to this who are considering being English teachers, that person's observation is not technically correct, because all schools always need English teachers. Like, it's a subject, by the way, that all the students do all the time. And therefore, it's the most secure job in education. Like, we're never worried about losing our jobs because it's the English teachers who are always the last to go.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change.
It's like when boys come to options evening and they ask me, "Why should I take English? You know, or what are you doing?" or whatever it is. The reality is English underpins everything. It underpins everything.
It's so easy to answer that question. And the thing is, they do English themselves, so they actually know. Mm. They don't need a lot of convincing. Mm. Although I must say I'm really pleased, because I've told you this, but I'd like to say it on the podcast,
yes,
that we've got to that point now where we've got rapid increases in the numbers of students who are selecting or electing to do English in levels 2 and 3. We've got 43 more students doing level 2 English.
That's
and that
so
means
cool.
We've got 9 level 2 English classes
wow.
now, and then we've got an extra class at level 3, so we've got 7 level 3 English classes in a school of like 680 boys. That's a lot of people who are choosing English, and that's in the context of all this harsh stuff that we are saying. You know, they actually really want to learn. This is the thing about young people that I think it seems to be a mystery to some people, but is obvious to us, is that they are attracted to environments where there's rigor and where the outcomes are obvious to them, and when they feel they experience their own success. And so the things we are trying to defend are actually seen by the students. Mm. They value it.
I've just been this week with my year nines, we're really going to, in the biographical unit, get into complex sentences. So, but I've recapped, obviously, simple and compound sentences. And I'm thinking about how many boys have chosen to take English at college for next year, which is incredible, by the way. Well done to you and your team. But watching my year nine boys, they had to write their own compound sentence. We focused on doing an independent clause, a simple sentence, and then using, you know, coordinate and conjunctions, making compound sentences. But they had to write theirs on the board. Then they had to find one that wasn't theirs, and we were unpacking. They had to do the subject, the verb, and maybe if it had an object, and coordinate and conjunction, blah, blah, blah. But I tell you, watching the boys chomping at the bit, they were actually sitting at their seats, and I know no one can see me, but when I was giving them the ready, you can come up and find a sentence to do this to, they were doing the position of ready to start a race, really, to get up And some of them, I watched them. I took photos because it was just so cool watching them race up to the board and critically analyzing and unpacking the different sentences. And one boy came and did a few. He was enjoying it. And I was watching the processing happening in his brain because I could see his profile as he stood there going, is that bit? Is it not? This is just reinforcing what you're saying. They were loving the learning. They're loving the challenge of it and actually mastering the skill. There was no one in that room that looked like this isn't cool. Well, they also got to draw on my whiteboard, so that's cool. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But that experience is just reinforcing what you've been saying. They like doing the work. They like teachers who also do the job well and are invested in their success, the relationship, all of the things that we've been covering today. We are not dinosaurs. And actually, whilst I am 44 and somewhat archaic now, being what, middle-aged, I am really pleased with the fact that I integrate moments of technology through possibly taking photos of my work and airdropping it to my laptop. I don't know.
We're not Luddites.
No, but I'm also really proud of the fact that I stand for something, and what I stand for, like you, is educating kids to be fabulous and skillful in what we're teaching, which is English.
Snaps to that, Bags.
Yeah, snaps to that.
I think we both have to get on with our day. I actually don't have a class now. I have a couple of colleagues from other subjects who want to learn about grammar for writing. So that's kind of exciting.
Oh, my God. Can I ask what subject areas before we finish that?
This one is economics and history.
Oh, that's amazing.
We're developing grammar for writing projects in their subjects because they also understand the need that the boys have to write well in the styles that they need them to.
And to have strong literacy skills. That's amazing. That's so cool.
They're just learning how to teach writing, which of course they used to just sit back and say, oh, the boys can't write these days. You know what I mean? Mm. And now they're saying, oh, I'm a teacher.
Yes.
I can teach that, if that's what they need. And so it's kind of cool. And it's a great, it's a great journey because it's so professionalizing. Like we learn so much ourselves in the process.
Yeah, no. Oh, that's really awesome. I'm just thinking about I've got my year 13s next period. I've got a non-contact now and they are presenting their speeches and they're doing it in the auditorium standing at the lectern, and I felt quite emotional watching a few of them talking about their journey of life and where they're going to yesterday when we started those. So I'm really looking forward to more of those. So that's on my agenda this morning.
Oh,
cool.
Oh, I wish I was there for that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it is actually beautiful. I'm feeling very proud of them, but also, again, quite swept up in the emotion of their words and the messages they're imparting to their peers. So,
and once again, that's actually an assessment, but it's just so much more.
Yeah, it is so much more. And I feel privileged that I get to, even though I've only been with them for this year, that I get to hear about their 5 years at Otago Boys and the things that they've learned. And
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool way to end my week, actually. So on that note, enjoy working with your colleagues. And
I will.
And,
thanks.
We will check in soon. Have a fabulous weekend, won't you?
Yeah, you too, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
It's a Boy Thing, a fortnightly chat about teaching English to boys with Gina and Chris.
It's when the teacher doesn't treat the students like their students, like they treat them like they're kind of like colleagues.
I think what makes a good teacher is clear set deadlines, good communication, willingness to like go over topics that some of us might find confusing.